The Pot of Caviar. It was the fourth day of the siege. Ammunition and provisions were both nearing an end. When the Boxer insurrection had suddenly flamed up and roared like a fire in dry grass across northern China, the few scattered Europeans in the outlying provinces had huddled together at the nearest defensible post and had held on for dear life until rescue came, or until it did not. In the latter case, the less said about their fate, the better. In the former, they came back into the world of men with that upon their faces which told that they had looked very closely upon such an end as would ever haunt their dreams. Yi Chow was only 50 miles from the coast, and there was a European squadron in the Gulf of Liantong. Therefore, the absurd little garrison, consisting of native Christians and railwaymen, with a German officer to command them, and 5 civilian Europeans to support him, held on bravely, with the conviction that help must soon come sweeping down to them from the low hills to eastward. The sea was visible from those hills, and on the sea were their armed countrymen. Surely, then, they could not feel deserted. With brave hearts they manned the loopholes and the crumbling brick walls outlining the tiny European quarter, and they fired away briskly, if ineffectively, at the rapidly advancing sangers of the Boxers. It was certain that in another day or so they would be at the end of their resources, but then it was equally certain that in another day or so they must be relieved. It might be a little sooner or it might be a little later, but there was no one who ever ventured to hint that the relief would not arrive in time to pluck them out of the fire. Up to Tuesday night, there was no word of discouragement. It was true that on the Wednesday, their robust faith in what was going forward behind those eastern hills had weakened a little. The grey slopes lay bare and unresponsive, while the deadly sangars pushed ever nearer, so near that the dreadful faces, which shrieked imprecations at them from time to time over the top, could be seen in every hideous feature. There was not so much of that now, since young Ainsley of the diplomatic service, with his neat little 303 sporting rifle, had settled down in the squat church tower and had devoted his days to abating the nuisance. But a silent sangar is an even more impressive thing than a clamorous one. And steadily, irresistibly, inevitably, the lines of brick and rubble drew closer. Soon they would be so near that one rush would assuredly carry the frantic swordsman over the frail entrenchment. It all seemed very black upon Wednesday evening. Colonel Dresler, the German ex-infantry soldier, went about with an imperturbable face but a heart of lead. Ralston of the railway was up half the night writing farewell letters. Professor Mercer, the old entomologist, was even more silent and grimly thoughtful than ever. Ainsley had lost some of his flippancy. On the whole, the ladies, Miss Sinclair, the nurse of the Scotch mission, Mrs. Patterson and her pretty daughter Jessie, were the most composed of the party. Father Pierre of the French mission was also unaffected, as was natural to one who regarded martyrdom as a glorious crown. The Boxers yelling for his blood beyond the walls disturbed him less than his forced association with the sturdy Scotch Presbyterian presence of Mr. Patterson, with whom for 10 years he had wrangled over the souls of the natives. They passed each other now in the corridors as dog passes cat, and each kept a watchful eye upon the other, lest even in the trenches he might filch some sheep from the rival fold, whispering heresy in his ear.